Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Just a minute, young man. 17-year-old Carl's dad stopped him at the front door. I seem to remember that last night we said no car privileges this weekend. Yeah, yeah, Carl looked up at the ceiling. Well then, his dad continued evenly, you can imagine how surprised your mom and I were to find both you and the car gone after that. I had something to do, Carl mumbled, shifting his gaze to his feet. Well, limits do mean something here, his dad replied carefully. And now there'll have to be a pretty big consequence for taking the car and yourself out when you were grounded. Yeah, whatever. Carl's sneer took over his face. I think it's up to no going out and no car for any weekend this month, his dad pronounced, trying to keep his temper in check. Now I think you can just lose the jacket and hand me the keys, please. Just get off my case, Carl growled, throwing the keys in his dad's direction and stomping up the stairs. From a parent's perspective, how can we successfully weather the difficulties of parenting teens? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest has visited with us before. She helps families cope with some of the problems we hope to address today about raising teens. Agnes Leshner is Director of Child Welfare Services in Montgomery County, Maryland. She oversees a staff of 210 people who provide services to children, including investigations of reported child abuse and neglect, family preservation, kinship care, foster care, adoption, and foster home finding. She is the mother of a grown son and daughter and grandmother of two young boys. Welcome back to Parents' Perspective, Agnes.
Thank you for having me.
What would you say is the single greatest source of friction between parents and teens?
Teenagers are trying to develop their own sense of self, and so they're trying to separate from their parents and be independent at the same time that they realize that they are very dependent on their parents. And so it sets up a difficulty in how much independence do parents give children and how much control do they take back. The other difficulty is that adolescents are going through a raging hormone, which is a reality, even though people sort of make fun of it, as well as a brain development stage, so that during adolescence, the brain of adolescents is growing. The prefrontal cortex is developing layers, not there yet, and therefore their impulse control is very poor. Some of the conflict that naturally happens is really a learning experience. Teens need to know how to disagree with an adult and then work it through. And the parents are the safest people to start doing that with. And that's the reason that it's so difficult.
So in other words, all the explosions that happen when the well-behaved kids in school come home are because they can explode safely. They know that that's a safe haven.
That's exactly the case.
So some of the rules are a security issue as well then.
Rules are very, very important. They need to be clear. They need to be explained. And teenagers need to be expected to follow. And if they don't, just like your earlier story said, parents need to talk about it and then they need to develop consequences because that's how teens learn to follow the rules that later on they're going to have to follow independently.
It's funny, when we were raising our kids, there was a phrase that always came up, logical consequences. If you leave your wet bathing suit on the floor and a parent doesn't pick it up, it will be wet when you start to use it again.
It's very, very important that parents keep their cool, that they set boundaries, they set high expectations, they hold adolescents accountable, but do it in a loving, kind way so that not every single disagreement turns into a big, major fight.
During adolescence, does self-esteem become a more loaded issue for kids?
During adolescence, the teens are developing their academic performance, their place in high school. And so the way that they present themselves and the way they're accepted by their peers is a very shaky period, which is all the more important that they be able to communicate well with their parents, that their parents invite them to discuss whatever conflict is going on, however they're going through some difficult stage with friends, with the opposite sex. And if parents can be open to and invite that kind of honest discussion, teenagers will be able to go through that period much more easily than if the parent is preoccupied, which they usually are. If they're working and then they come home and they have to make dinner, and they might not be as inviting as they need to be. And then the teens take their discussions or their conflicts to their peers, which is not always the healthiest place to take it.
Now, how does a parent become inviting? Usually you see the stereotypical, so how was your day? Fine. What did you do? Nothing.
One of the things that's important for parents to remember is that kids model what they see. So if the parent is willing to sit down and spend a few minutes, even if the teen is not very conversant at first, the teen notices that. They may not respond immediately, but they definitely notice that. And so the parent has to be calm, has to be inviting, has to be patient, and they have to do it repeatedly. I think one of the most important things that parents don't realize is that the teenager is going to model after the parent.
They do what we do. They don't do what we say.
Exactly. Exactly. One particular situation comes to my mind where a young boy was living with a single mom who was having a lot of difficulties, including dating a lot of different men who this boy did not approve of. And they got into a lot of altercations and decided that it would be better for this boy to go live with another family. And so he went to live with a neighbor family that was a two-parent family, and he went from being a student who was failing in school to now having a 3.8 average and doing very well in football and likely getting a scholarship in college. Now, he still has a relationship with his mother, but he really felt that the kinds of behaviors that she was modeling about not being available to him, about dating men that he really didn't like, was a situation where he could not succeed. And I think that the mom underestimated how much he was watching what she was doing and the decisions that she was making. And when he was put in a different situation where the parents modeled a different kind of behavior and developed with him hobbies that he could excel in and the academic performance which they demanded from him, all of a sudden he blossomed.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on the difficulties of parenting teens.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Agnes Leshner about the difficulties of parenting teens. We just sort of discussed a little bit about the current adolescent brain research, and it evidently denotes that the part of the brain we were talking about, the frontal lobe that's responsible for limit setting, planning, delayed gratification, and all that, what we call responsible behavior, is not fully developed until age 21. Some of us would say 35, but anyway. So what does this mean for parenting teenagers if we can't expect that kind of behavior?
I think that the important things to keep in mind are, number one, that adolescents need to be taught to constructively use their free time. When they're in school, they have a structure, but they need to have a structure after school. And so parents need to help them develop skills, they need interests, hobbies, and they need to be as structured after school hours as they are during the day. The second thing that parents need to do is they need to monitor where their adolescents are. Don't assume that just because they said that they're going to play soccer, that they really are going to play soccer. They need to go take a look at it. They need to check with the coach. They need to find out who they're going out with during the weekend. They need to communicate with the parents of some of those so that there is oversight and not just the assumption that because you've got a good kid, they're going to do everything that they tell you. And I can tell you that my daughter, who did very well in school and was a very good kid in high school, ran track. And one night, this is just one example, but one Saturday night, she said she was going out because the track team was having a practice session and the coach was meeting them at the high school. And so we happened to drive by one of the areas where teenagers hung out, and lo and behold, there was our daughter hanging out with her friends. So rather than interrupt anything, we waited until she came home and we said, "How was the meeting?" And she went lying, you know, straight to our face. And then when we confronted her about having seen her, she owned up to it. And as far as we know, it never happened again. But that's the kind of monitoring. You know, parents need to be vigilant about who their kids are going out with and are they really where they're supposed to be.
That's interesting.
That was a lucky catch.
Yes, very.
We had with one of our kids a big issue about parties, mm-hmm. because if they said they were going to go to a party with somebody's house, I wanted to call. And they were ballistic about this because they felt they were being monitored and they wanted the independence of, "Don't you trust me?" And I was saying, sometimes parties get out of hand. I want to be sure the parents are there. "Oh, so-and-so said his parents are going to be there." So how do you handle that?
I think it is important for parents to not give in to that kind of, you know, "How come you don't trust me?" I think that because teenagers are going through a very impulsive period and trying lots of different things, it's all the more important for parents to have the kind of oversight that you're talking about. So when they're going to a party, to call the parent and check out, are they really going to be home and how many kids are they having and how much supervision they're going to get. And you may have the best kid, but that doesn't mean that they're not going to be enticed into an attractive situation which could, you know, turn out to have bad consequences.
I remember one of the ideas that a teacher once gave us as a group of parents was, make sure you have a code word with your kids. So if they want to call you and escape from a situation where they're uncomfortable, they can call you, use the code word, and you know you're supposed to go and pick them up. It works.
That's a wonderful idea.
So what do we do about outright defiance when it happens?
I think parents need to just persevere. I think that the important thing is to remain calm. I think what happens too frequently is that parents get so frustrated because it happens over and over again that they either resort to some sort of physical altercation, which does not have good consequences and in fact models physical consequences, which is not a good thing for kids to see. And I think that parents need to keep saying over and over again to adolescents what the important goals are, what the important philosophies are. And I know it's very, very hard, but not lose their cool. You need to pick your battles and then not lose the war because you become so frustrated. This is the fifth time I've told you that you need to be in at a certain time. Well, you know what? With adolescents, you need to say it 25 times, and they're still going to test it to see, do you really mean it?
Why are alcohol and substance abuse such an issue with teenagers?
This goes back to the earlier suggestion that teenagers are experimenting. It's a phase where both because of their raging hormones, their brain development, and their peers, they want to try everything. So the more available alcohol and drugs are, the more teens are going to be attracted to at least trying it. And unfortunately, some teens, because of other problems in their life, find either alcohol or drugs a good escape from a situation that really is very unpleasant for them, which is one of the reasons why it's important for parents to monitor what's going on at some of the parties, what is happening. And I can tell you that one of my neighbors had a son who was very well behaved, but my neighbor worked during the day, and so her son kept bringing kids to the house in the afternoon, and he said, oh, we're just doing homework. And because he really was a kid who behaved well, she believed him. And one of the neighbors saw one of the kids getting into his car with a bottle of beer and reported it to my friend, who then surprised her son and came home early from work one day. And lo and behold, what they were doing was having a smoking drinking party, and then they would clean it up before my friend got home. So being structured and being vigilant are keys to making sure that the experimentation that goes on with teens is not something that goes on over an extended period of time.
I think it's important to point out that that neighbor did the right thing.
Oh, absolutely.
We all need to be in a position where we would squawk if we saw something that wasn't so good.
How do kids who are in this impulsive trying out stage deal with the peer pressure to try out this stuff? You may have a kid who's a little reluctant, but the pressure's all around.
Which is one of the reasons why parents need to keep an open dialogue and to encourage honesty in their kids so that the adolescent can feel comfortable and accepted by the parent no matter how bad the situation is, no matter what they did or what they participated in, that they be able to come to the parent and to be able to say, I was invited to somebody's house and I know there's going to be alcohol there and I don't want to go. What are some of my escape mechanisms? The important thing is for parents to be good listeners and to invite adolescents to talk to them no matter how difficult, how terrible the situation is. And that doesn't happen as often as it needs to. And so what happens is that teenagers use their friends to be the sounding board. And then if the teenager is also torn between going with the quote-unquote bad crowd or going with the way the parents taught them, they could be, because of this lack of impulse control, drawn into trying drugs, trying alcohol, trying sex, and all of the things that we don't want our kids to be experimenting with early in adolescence.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on the difficulties of parenting teens.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Agnes Leshner about the difficulties of parenting teens.
What do you counsel parents if the kid has gotten what we would call off track, going with a bad group, doing things they're not supposed to do? How do you get them back?
I think that a couple of things might work. One is I think the parents need to set boundaries. They need to set a structure, and they need to have clear expectations of the child. So even if they've gotten into trouble and into a bad crowd, it is definitely possible to pull them back in a clear, calm way, and to keep saying that this is for your own benefit. Now, teenagers are going to say, that just isn't true. But parents need to stay focused because the adolescent development is a process. It's not a one-time quick fix. It goes on for years and years. And it's important for parents to recognize how important what they're modeling for their adolescents will impact them later on in life. So clear expectations, inviting them to discuss honestly what's going on, and also having a structure to their day after school is very, very important. Find out what their interests are, find out what's available in after-school activities, and then keep them as busy as you possibly can if the parent is not at home.
What about the concept of mentoring? Because I was thinking we're inviting them to talk to us as parents. They may not want to talk to us for whatever reason. Would it make sense to try to have somebody else in their lives, coach, grandparent, uncle, the guy who has the bicycle shop down the street, to bring in yet another adult?
In some situations, I think that that is a good idea, but I think that parents give up too quickly because adolescents have very short attention spans and they are flippant about their parents. They just think, oh, parents don't know anything, and they, as adolescents, know everything. And that's part of the risky behavior. Oh, nothing is going to happen to me if I have a few beers. Nothing is going to happen to me if I try marijuana. And that's part of their impulsive, risk-taking adolescent years. That's perfectly normal. But I think that parents need to keep making themselves available and keep making themselves open. I think if that absolutely will not work, particularly if it's a single mother with a male child, finding another adult is not a bad idea. But I think that you need to set up rules and boundaries, because does the mentor tell the parent what the adolescent told them, or does the mentor keep everything to themselves? And at what point, you know, do they come to the parent? So I think that there needs to be sort of a laying of groundwork if that's going to work.
They don't want to listen to parents talk. And so making ourselves available to listen to them is one thing. Making ourselves able to detect when is a good time to talk with them is tougher, I think.
One possibility is to say to the adolescent, I want to have this discussion. Why don't you determine the time? Because one of the things that adolescents want to do is they want to control their time and their agenda. And so as much as you can give them some control, the better they will feel about it. If you let them know that you are available and you'd love to hear from them and you'd love to have their opinion about something is a good way to go. The other recommendation that I would have is that families should find an activity and a time to do something that's fun. So let the adolescent decide, let the family decide together, but it shouldn't always be a serious discussion about consequences and how did you do in school. There ought to be time set aside for fun activities, and whether that's going swimming somewhere or, you know, going on vacation or going to a movie that the adolescent chooses, those fun times are critical, and I think that we undervalue them at times.
Are there any kinds of tools that you would want to lay out that parents could use to navigate these difficult years? I know parents who are just starting this must be terrified because there's a lot of stuff that goes on.
It's always a good idea for parents to either form a support group or find some parenting for adolescent groups. And most communities have either attached to the school after school, particularly in situations where there is a change in a child's school. So, for example, going from elementary school to middle school is pretty traumatic for kids. And then going from middle school to high school is very traumatic. Many schools across the country have programs that help parents with parenting an adolescent who's moving to a new school with a new set of expectations. If that's not available, I would suggest that parents seek out a family service agency in their community, not necessarily because parents are doing something wrong, but to find new techniques, new strategies. And often doing that in a group, you learn from other people. What have they done that has succeeded? Many of these groups bring back parents who have successfully parented kids who are now grown to talk about what are the experiences and what worked and what didn't work. I would highly recommend those kinds of information exchanges.
And you don't want to be just preaching to the choir here. It's not just the people who we already know are probably very involved in their children's lives, but the people who are on the fringes worrying but not really acting. Here's an opportunity to find out how other parents are managing.
And a lot of parents are very, very nervous. Mm-hmm. And the way that they express it is by over-controlling. And that's also a big mistake, because the only way that adolescents know how to deal with that kind of overcontrol is to rebel. And then they get aggressive or they go out and try drugs and alcohol just to show the parent that they can't be controlled. So it's a fine balance for parents to be monitoring but not being over-controlling of their teenagers.
It's interesting. When one of my kids started high school, I remember somebody who was a little further along than we were at the time saying, listen, this business of having parent support groups is really important. Your kid has a support group and a network. You need one too. And it was always a good reality check.
It also forms natural relationships between parents so that if they run into a problem, they can call some other parents and say, what are you doing about this?
What resources would you suggest for listeners who want to pursue some of these issues further?
I would suggest they explore whether the school has any programs for parents in how to parent a teenager. I think that each community has various kinds of parenting groups as a part of counseling groups, for example, a family service agency. Each community has something different. And if the parent is really uncomfortable, and there are some parents who would prefer to talk to somebody one-on-one, there are counselors and therapists who are very skilled at helping parents work through some of these issues and may suggest family therapy, where the youth is also invited to the meeting. Because as I said before, it's very important for adolescents to feel like they've got some control. So you want to invite them as much as possible to participate in whatever decisions are made. And so family therapy in difficult cases is highly, highly successful.
Well, you really gave us an awful lot to think about and a lot of insights for all of us who are weathering the teenage years. So, Agnes Leschner, thank you so very much for being with us today.
I hope it helps.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And please spell everything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 431 and tell us, if you can, what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from our listeners. Our sound engineer is Elizabeth Buckle. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.